Welcome to the Writing Talk Podcast with Mikey Campling. Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Writing Talk Podcast. I'm Mikey Campling and today I'm going to be talking on the topic of keeping your writing in the moment. Now, a couple of episodes ago, back in episode 4, I was discussing the idea of being rather heavy-handed in your writing, and this really is the exact opposite of that. This is what we're aiming for, because it's all very easy, I think, to say, OK, don't do this, don't do that. But what I'm really going to try and help you with today is saying what you do do. Now, my writing isn't perfect, and it never will be. It's something that you strive for. And this is one of the things I work at all the time, is trying to keep things in the moment. And I know that if I don't work hard at it, it will be, instead of being a strength, it will be a weakness, something that I drift into far too easily, and it is very easily done. So I'm going to go through some things that I think. You may have different views. Please do feel free to chip in with comments on the website at writingtalkpodcast.com. Comments are always really, really welcome. Okay, I think we'll start off by just saying, what exactly do I mean by being in the moment? And I'm talking about the kind of writing that keeps us rooted in the action. It keeps us experiencing the story alongside the character. Almost as if we're there. It's when you're reading, it's that experience of really losing yourself in a book, really feeling as if you're there, as if you can actually see every detail, hear every sound, you know, feel every feeling and so on. That said, use the senses carefully. I think they're very important to put in, but your character's senses can be very much overdone, and sometimes they can go the opposite way and actually become heavy-handed, and I'll try and explain exactly what I mean. For instance, it's very easy to overuse the phrases that he saw or he heard or she saw or whatever. And if they can see them, we don't need to be told that they can see them. We just need to know that they exist. For instance, let's take a situation. Imagine that somebody comes into a room and there they see a book lying open on the table, and it wasn't that way they left it. So something has happened to this book, something significant, say. So if we say Frank came in and saw the book left open on the table, which was strange because he left it closed. And that's very much an exposition way of doing it. It's quite a heavy-handed way. If, on the other hand, obviously this is taken slightly out of context, but if we just go straight into, you know, Frank's come into the room and then it just says the book was open on the table. There's lots of different ways of doing this. Even better is if we then have some kind of response. So to make it very much in the moment, as if we are there, right, is it almost as if we are, say, Frank or whatever its person's going to be called. Wish I hadn't chosen Frank now. Come in, we say, okay, the book was open on the table, the blood drained from his face, kind of thing. Now, obviously, I didn't read that with any expression, having kind of rather made it up on the hoof, but you get the idea. We are trying to interpret the events, and when we see something, we don't think, gosh, I've just seen that book. You think the book's on the table. So we can often cut out the seeing and the hearing part of the sentence and just launch into it. That's what's happened. As a reader, we will understand that the character's experienced it, and that's why you've written it down. You know, we don't need telling that somebody saw or heard or felt whatever that particular sensation. We'll get it. And in fact, just get out the way, you know, keep out of our way, because as readers, we don't want to know about you. We just want to know about the person in the story. And I think those immediate responses, you know, if somebody's, you know, chewing their lip or whatever as a response to something they've seen, again, we don't need that explaining. That can just happen. It can just plunk it in there. So the book's, you know, up on the table, he chews his lip or a blood strain from his face or something like that, and we understand that it's significant. That's the only signposting we need. When you are using things like body language and internal sensations for characters, now they are really important, really, really valuable, and they do really keep us in the action along with the character, or in the moment with the character, because it might not be action, it could be, you know, an emotional scene, for instance. But remember not to mix them up, those two things. Be very aware of the point of view of the scene. And if you're not clear on that, that might be worth revisiting it in a scene. It's probably a better idea to give one character sort of centre stage for a scene and then switch as necessary to another character's point of view. But take somebody as being centre stage, and then they can tell us their internal sensations, but they can see somebody else's external body language. So, for instance, just to make that a bit clearer, perhaps, if you're writing a scene from Brian's point of view, we don't want to know about Jen's heart racing. Brian can't tell that Jen's heart is racing unless he's got a stethoscope tucked up his sleeve. So those things need to be separate. OK, if we're talking about Jen, then yes, her heart's racing. OK, so try not to mix up those ideas. If you use the thesaurus of emotions I mentioned in another podcast, I'll put a link in the show notes on the website again, so you can find that. That's really handy because that actually separates internal sensations and the external body language cues that go along with each emotion. So it's a really good way of just cross-referencing and just checking and getting ideas sometimes. OK, another great way to keep your readers in the moment and to write in the moment is to be very economical with your words. Use economy. Now, the longer-winded something is in a passage of writing, the more likely it is that you'll accidentally slip into becoming heavy-handed and you won't actually be in the moment anymore. So try to keep off your soapbox. We don't need any lectures, thank you. They turn readers off. None of us like that in a book. And we don't want things over-explained to us as well. We're not stupid. You know, we'll follow along. But being economical with your words doesn't just mean being sparse with them. It really is about ramping up the impact of the words that you do use. One way of focusing in on that is just to avoid things like redundant verbs. I see quite a lot of verbs added in if people are beginning or starting to do something. And I just went looking for a few examples for today's podcast. And there are some examples here I'll give, and I won't say which book they're from. They are by a real author, and they're all from the same author. But it's not particularly me wanting to be critical of that person, so I'm not going to say who they were. I just happen to know that this person has what I would consider some flaws in their sentence-level writing. So, for example, tears began to well up in her eyes. Now, the began is redundant there, because if tears are welling up in your eyes, that's kind of what it means. It means that they're beginning. Otherwise, you're actually crying. So often saying that somebody is going to begin something or to start something is quite redundant. And because it's redundant, it is in danger of taking us out of the moment. So try to strip away things like that. The other thing that helps is having a clear idea of sequence. Now, this is perhaps where outlining could help you, an idea of sequence of what is actually happening and when. So you keep the events logical and ordered and present them in the order that they happen is probably the best thing, because otherwise the reader is going to have to work that out for themselves. And if part of their brain has to go off and process the order that things are happening in, then you've taken them out the moment again. It's quite a precious thing. If you can get your reader in the moment, try really hard not to do anything that jars them or they'll drop out of it immediately. Now, one of the things I would say, and I see this quite a lot, is that people have a tendency in their writing to make things relative, to make events relative to each other. For instance, they use before and after, and that tends to get overused. And actually, it not only takes us out the moment, but really, if the events have been given in the logical order anyway, then they are, again, redundant. So they tend to lessen the impact. So I think always be direct. Just tell us what happens. For instance, and again, this is an example from a book. After wiping his mouth, he said, "I was already angry." Now, to me, that just doesn't work. And if we reorder it a little bit and just sort of say, "Come out and do it," then the said isn't needed. So if it just says, "He wiped his mouth," full stop, "I was already angry." And we can go straight into that dialogue because we've introduced the reader that we are dealing with this character. And the fact that the next bit's in speech marks, we know straight away that the character we're talking about is now saying something. And the after is just irrelevant. You're actually, in a way, you're giving a signpost to your reader that sends them down the garden path, because it's neither here nor there, the fact that it's after it. You know, it's just perhaps a tick that writer has developed, a crutch phrase that they tend to plop in when they're not sure. And here's another one, actually, from the same writer. It says, "Just before getting up, Gordon spit in his face." Now, the fact that he spat in somebody's face, or as we'd say in English, or another past tense tends to be spit in the USA, that's a very dramatic thing if one character has decided to spit in the face of another. And I think saying just before getting up, he did it, it diminishes it. It takes away its impact. And that's the opposite of being in the moment, and it's the opposite of being economical. It's a very dramatic action that's been spoilt, really. And, you know, the idea of giving things weight, if something is important, give it its own little sentence. Readers understand that when we give a chunk of something on its own, it's because we are focusing on it and we want them to attach some weight to it. Similarly, take care with using the word as to imply relationship between events happening. And again, I'll just give you a little example from a book. She sat up quickly, her heart racing as cold sweat clung to her skin. Now, to me, that is just actually wrong. That they're kind of related in a bizarre way, but they don't really belong together in the same chunk of the sentence. I'm not going to go into, you know, clauses and things like that, because grammatically you could probably argue that it's correct. It just doesn't read well. It doesn't have impact. So, for instance, if we take out the as and we give the cold sweat its own sentence, we say it's really important, then we can have, she sat up quickly, her heart racing, full stop, a cold sweat clung to her skin. And actually, as a sentence, a cold sweat clung to her skin is actually really nice. That has impact. Whereas when it was just sort of popped on the end of the other bit, it lost its impact because it was just sort of, you know, put in this relative way with the as. Okay, another way of keeping people in the moment is to use what you might call internal dialogue. This is where we are giving the kind of dialogue that a character has with themselves, you're running through their mind, but it's not their he thought, she thought. And so it doesn't need italics. We are actually giving the character's thoughts direct to the reader. And the effect of that is the reader is almost like they're inside the character's head and they can see what they're thinking. And it works well. I do it a lot. I think it's good. I like it. I like to read books that are written like that. So we might say, this is a little chunk from Trespass, one of my books. And the character's just woken up with a start and it says, what had woken him? What had he heard? And that is really his kind of internal dialogue presented in that way. And I think it's clear that readers understand that that is from the character's point of view. Okay, to help explain that a little bit, I'm going to read a little chunk from Trespass, A Tale of Mystery and Suspense Across Time, which is the first full-length Darkening Stone novel. And I'm just going to do a short reading. And I thought I would start doing little readings within the podcast. So more on that later, because there'll be an opportunity for me to read out something you've written as we go on. Okay. So this is a little bit from chapter 2, and see if you think it's in the moment. I mean, I must say I wrote this several years ago, so perhaps now I would look at it, and you're always trying to improve, and I'd probably say, well, I wouldn't have quite done that like that now. You know, I'm quite happy to criticise my own stuff. Okay, so chapter 2, which is set in 3500 BC. Wiccan was old. Unnaturally so, some said. He slept an old man's fitful sleep, riddled with disconnected dreams, muddled with distant memories. But tonight it is not his dreams that disturb him, but something real. Something alive. Something close. Wiccan snapped awake, lurched upright, called out into the darkness. Who's there? Father? Is it you? No answer. Wiccan shivered. What had woken him? What had he heard? He shook his head to rouse himself, dispel the confusion of waking. It didn't help. He was drained, couldn't think properly, hadn't been able to for days, not since... His father's voice interrupted his thoughts. No, my son, don't think of that. Don't let fear steal your thoughts. No, father. But he had heard something nearby, whispering or rustling like someone wading through dead leaves.
Hold your breath, Wiccan. Listen. Silence. If he could hear it again, he could identify it. An animal, perhaps. The pounce of a night hunter, the scrabbling of its prey. He'd often heard these sounds on nights as still as this. So why was he so afraid? And that's just a little snippet from Trespass. And you could argue, and some people would, because some of the quite sparse use of language in there, that some people could say, oh, this is a comma splice, and, you know, things like that. Okay, there are places there where I have used that, and it's not actually wrong, no matter what anybody may tell you. You can use a comma splice, and perhaps if you're not sure what that is, it's where you sort of put the two chunks of meaning in a sentence next to each other, just separated by a comma, rather than using different punctuation, like perhaps a semicolon, or perhaps you use something like an and to separate them. And I'm not going to go into all the technical grammatical names of stuff, because I don't think it particularly helps. Just those two chunks of meaning are plonked down next to each other. And what I was going there was for an effect to be very in the moment, because this guy is an old man who's just woken up, and his thoughts are disjointed and disconnected. And so those very punchy thoughts happening one after the other is exactly the effect you want. So it's written that way to keep you in the moment, and it's written that way for effect, to sort of, the writing style is mimicking the character's series of thoughts, if that makes sense. I hope so. Okay, the other thing I'd like to just do a little bit of in these podcasts, just to try and liven them up a bit as well, is just to talk about what I'm reading. So I will put a link as well in the show notes. I'm actually reading Fight Club, and I don't know how to pronounce the guy's name. It's something like Chuck Palahniuk, but I'll put full links in the show notes. I'm sure you have no difficulty Googling who wrote Fight Club. I don't know why it's taken me so long to read it. I read very widely, so I read classic stuff and modern stuff and crime stuff and sci-fi, all different kinds of things. And that's really quite a fascinating read. I don't know if you've read it. Again, this isn't a book review show, but I just thought I'd just sort of touch base with you and let you know what I'm reading. Be interested if you've read it, what your experiences of it are. Just, you know, I have seen the film a few times, which is a slight spoiler, but, you know, I'm still enjoying it. And that is a very interesting style. If you want to look at somebody's style in there and the way they use the voice of the characters, and I mean, it actually fits really well with the example I've just given, because partly as a result of this guy's mental unravelling through his insomnia, I won't do any spoilers, don't worry, a lot of it seems quite disconnected and choppy, and a lot of repetition of, like, he says, Tyler says, and you get that quite a lot, and it's just quite interesting the way that technique is used very effectively. So I'll let you know when I've finished it. But it's quite a short book, really. But that's nice. I think it's really good in your writing to read as widely as possible. And although having spent time writing and editing things, you do start to lose some of your enjoyment of books, because you start to think, oh, you know, I wouldn't have done that. Or, oh, and, oh, that's interesting, the way they're structuring that story. And, you know, you've dropped out of the moment. I still think it's nice for those moments. I mean, I love reading anyway, I always have, but I like those moments where you just think, oh, that is amazing what they've done there, that is really fantastic, you know, and you're saying bravo, really, really good, skillful stuff. Perhaps a good writer, or maybe a good editor, I dare say. Okay, I said there'd be an opportunity to have some stuff read out by me on the podcast, and here goes. What I'd like to do is do a flash fiction challenge. I'll say up to about 500 words. I mean, it's not an absolutely, you know, ironclad limit, but I think roughly in the area, please. And you can post it on your site, so you're getting something out of it, you get a bit of content for your site. The subject I would like to have is quite a broad one. If you've already written something, it's fine. I'd like to take something along the ideas of alone in the house. So who's alone in the house, why they're alone in the house, that's all completely up to you. What kind of house, ancient or modern? It could be a chunk of something you've already written. The only thing is, the theme here is being in the moment. So if you could try and write something, if it's a complete story, that would be absolutely fantastic, because that would be nicer for the for the listeners for me to read out. So if we can manage to sort of do a flash fiction complete story in about 500 words maximum, make it much shorter if you wish, of course. Use that economy, keep us in the moment, use that logical ordering of events and really carefully salt and pepper it with things like internal dialogue, body language and internal sensations to keep us living that scene or story along with your character or characters. And I will pick at least one to read out. And I'll, you know, hopefully that'll be kind of nice for you as well. So what you do is write it on your site and put something in the comments on my site at writingtalkpodcast.com. And Writing Talk Podcast is all one word, please. And you should find it there. This is episode 6, it needs to go into. Any information you want me to be aware of, just put that in the comment. I haven't got a prize at the moment to offer, I'm afraid, other than you'll get a live reading of it going out in the podcast. And I will leave it there for the moment. Thank you very much for listening. I hope I've given you something to think about, to unpick from all that. There's quite a lot to it. Questions and comments always really welcome on the site at writingtalkpodcast.com. And really, to help me keep this thing going, at the moment it's still quite early days and it's still probably quite a small audience, but just to let me know there's a few people out there listening, that will keep me going, please. So you can find us on Stitcher and on iTunes, and reviews and ratings at on iTunes would be very much welcome, very much appreciated, as well shares on Facebook and Twitter and other social media, Google Plus and so on. That would be great. Plus, it'd be really nice to hear from you, and you can grab hold of me on the site. You can also say hi to me on my site, at which is called mikeycampling.com, which, if you sign up for the newsletter, you will actually get Trespass for free, along with Breaking Ground, which is another Darkening Stone book. So if you like the sound of what was going on with Wiccan 3500 BC, then you might like to read Trespass, which is set partly in modern times and partly over 5,000 years ago. So it's quite a tale told across 5,000 years, which I'm sure you'll enjoy, full of mystery and suspense. It's got lots of nice reviews and ratings and so on Amazon, so I think people who read it tend to enjoy it. So you might like to check that out. Available exclusively on Amazon at the moment, so that means that Prime members can borrow it for free as part of their monthly borrow that they're allowed, and Kindle Unlimited members can borrow it till the cows come home. So anyway, thank you very much, and goodbye.